Jason will follow us. Jason leads you up to the Twins. They have been feeble for a long, long time. Two games back of the playoffs right now. Beautiful night to be at Target Field. Although, let's be honest, we probably more people at Target Center with the Lynx playing game two than at Target Field. But you'll hear Twins pregame and every pitch tonight with the first pitch about 6:40. They take on the woeful Miami Marlins. Susan K. Jones is here.
Yes.
And I am stealing this topic 100% from Winging It Wednesday, Adam and Jordana.
Okay.
Because I was captivated by this topic.
Okay.
It was Adam's, and the idea, are we born good? Are we born bad? Hmm. If you want to say evil, you can go with that. That's a little bit stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Adam believes we're born good. Jordana believes we're born bad. And then have to be trained and conditioned to do the right things. I believe the overwhelming majority are born. Which way are you guessing, Susie?
Good.
You think I believe the overwhelming majority are born good or bad?
Good, I hope.
Yes. Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Now, Jordana doesn't share food with anybody either, so maybe that explains a lot. Yeah. Doesn't share food. That's a line in the sand for me. When you go out, let's say the three of us went out for dinner tonight.
Okay.
And Harrigan goes, how about this? How about we get three items, we get a couple appetizers, and we share everything? Where would you stand on that?
Me? I'm all in on sharing.
Thank you.
We share all the time.
Happy to share.
Last night I went to the Beast Barbecue, Korean barbecue on East Hennepin. We all share.
Ooh.
Beautiful.
How is that? I've heard some good
really,
things.
Really good. And guess what? There was a jazz band downstairs, an 18-piece jazz band. And now I'm not going to remember. North Star Jazz Band or something like that. But terrific night, terrific food. I had some beautiful cauliflower. I had Brussels sprouts, and I had a pulled pork sandwich.
Oh, all my favorites right there.
And we shared them all.
Brussels sprouts, pulled pork.
Yeah, we shared them. Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the topic.
Okay, good or bad?
We have awful individuals.
That's right.
Who seemingly, some of them, are born awful right from the get-go. I get that. There's always going to be nuance in this conversation. And we see individuals who are in leadership positions who are capable of dastardly things.
Dastardly. That's a good word.
But when you're born, I think, and it's not everyone, but I think it's, to me, it's not even close. More are born open-minded, decent, happy, and willing to experience good things, and then some difficult things happen to them, whether it's how they're raised or mental health challenges, mm-hmm. or that viciousness comes out. So I want to believe that significantly more people are born good than bad. Expand. What do you think?
Well, I was thinking, as you're speaking, about temperament, and I want to ask you, so, and even Dave Harrigan, when your kids were born, they came to you, in my opinion, my kids came to me intact. Like, my daughter has a very, very different personality than my son. Like, she arrived as this sassy, bossy, little, headstrong. And
can't imagine where she got any of that from, Dave.
No, it's no idea.
But I think, you know, DNA, I didn't do anything. She just arrived and she had that little frown and she told people what to do. And then Ben was much more sweet and he would follow her around and he would say, do you want to be my friend? And she'd say, no. And he'd say, why don't you want to be my friend?
Sounds like you again. I mean, I can hear Erica. Does that sound like something Susie would say right now?
Mm-hmm.
Co-workers?
It very much does. And then she'd spill some gossip behind their back 12 seconds later.
Oh, Lord. Yes. So the point is, as you know, your girls probably aren't exactly the same, and your boys aren't the same.
No.
So I think there's an element, obviously, if someone's got a little chip on their shoulder, or they're a little feisty or a little sort of a temperament that they come with. Now, as you say, I believe children are basically precious and 100% gold at the start, and that sadly things happen, whether it's abuse, you know, if a kid gets beat all the time or left alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading a story, and I'm kind of going off track, not really off track, but about Prince Rogers Nelson, whose stepfather, after his father left, the mom remarried, left him in his room for hours at a time, put food in there. I mean, isolation,
awesome.
Some of the stuff that humans live through scar mm-hmm. them, and whether they make
yes.
them do evil things, I don't know. Anyway, that's my expounding.
Okay. Let me respond to you, and then, Dave, I want you to chime in.
Okay.
I don't doubt, and I think everybody agree, you know, kids and all adults have different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for us, our two older boys, they weren't great sleepers. And then, because I'm not a good sleeper, I would get up quickly. Kathleen, and she's fortunate, she's a very good sleeper. So that would there be times where I'd get up over and over again, and then she would have slept 5 hours, and all of a sudden, you know, she hears a peep, and I'd be like, please don't get up. No, I got to get up. I'm like, I've already been up. They're almost ready to sleep. So I'm not talking about if somebody has a little more of an attitude or they're more colicky or it takes more attention. I mean, Quentin, because he just had so many health issues.
Sure.
Was a different category. I'm just talking mean.
And maybe, and, you know what, Chad, maybe there really are. Maybe there are people that have a seed and they are.
Some do.
Yeah. I mean, you got to believe there's a level of viciousness or just depraved. We've seen crimes where we've went, oh, you know, shake your head like, eek. And is that person, did they arrive here?
Yeah.
With that darkness.
We have individuals who, I mean, listen, when you read the news, there are stories where we're like, oh, my God, well, what was it? Why would a person do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now what's happened throughout his or her life to cause that changes? Or was this somebody where people thought right away? So, Dave, I'm not saying 100% everyone is born flawless, but of if it's just strictly the two options, to me, I don't think it's close. Good. What do you want to say and expand on it?
I was born flawless. You're welcome, world.
Yeah. You still think you are flawless, too, so nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Again, you're welcome, world. I'm much more the believer of the nature versus nurture. And for me, nature is I tend to believe a child is born simply not good, not bad, but just survival. Clinging to survival, finding a way to survive. I think that's probably the only natural thing that comes with a child. And the first thing they learn, typically, is probably love. From a mother, from a father. And you learn that at a very early age. Hours, minutes. Seconds after you are born, that someone's taking care of me, I'm being loved. But for so many reasons, as you grow, as you learn more things, as you have more experiences, you might have good parents, you might have bad parents, you might not have parents at all, you might be a foster child. You know, there's so many. It's a vast array of different experiences that we can have that I think that molds us. As we're 5 years old, 10 years old, 20, 50, whatever, I think that molds us to where we tend to drift towards good or drift towards bad. And frankly, I think in a lot of this world, bad or evil or whatever you want to call it is a lot easier.
Let's get to some of the text here. And then we have a bonus surprise for you, Susie.
What?
So this is picking up on Adam and Jordana. And you can podcast Adam and Jordana anytime you'd like. Anywhere you get your podcasts. Winging It Wednesday and Adam having the debate, are we born good or bad? Adam was good. Jordana was bad. Among the texts, we are born good. More tech, we're born. We are born mostly good and trained by life and people to be bad. I think we're trained by people to be good and bad. I'm sharing. The first thing I do is put ketchup on everything. Help yourself. No, you're bad. You're awful. You're dreadful. Right from the
That person was born evil.
Yes. More text at 651-461-9226. I say we're born bad. That's why we have church, schools, communion, confirmation laws to turn people good. People who don't buy in remain bad. Come on. Honestly? That's the only way that you turn into a decent person is through church, schools, communion, confirmation laws? No, I don't agree. A quick Google search for actual research and data on this. Well, guess what?
What?
There's no proof either way. According to current research, studies suggest that humans are not born inherently good or bad, but rather have an innate capacity for both morality and immorality. Sure. I see that.
Mm-hmm.
Father Forn. We're born both good and bad. 1 minute hugs and kisses, next punches the head, then later back to hugs. We are very complicated. That's the most accurate one of all, right, mm-hmm. Susie?
Yeah, 100%. And I share that. I mean, not that I ever punched my kids in the head, but, you know, I
think they were talking about the kids, you know, punching themselves and fighting and stuff. Not that this Dexter was saying, you know what I do? I like to punch my kids in the head.
No, but I mean, that happens. You can have an abusive situation, and that even messes you up even more when someone punches you and then says, oh, I'm sorry, and then punches you again. There's many ways to screw up humans.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of screwing up humans, Dave Harrigan, hit the sounder.
Well, guess who's joining us today?
Susan Gage.
Not even she knows what she'll say.
Susie Jones.
If you cross her, she will set you straight.
Susan Gage.
Or she might be looking for a date.
Susie Jones.
It's time for Susie Jones.
Oh, excuse me. Hold on a second. Excellent work as always.
Every time you join, you're going to hear that now.
Oh,
Susan.
My gosh. That and is beautiful. You're going to win an Academy Award.
Yeah. We're almost there where Monday through Thursday, you will be our regular news anchor.
Yes.
We're pretty much there. We just have to decapitate a couple people, and we're almost there.
Aw.
You know, so which means, what are we thinking, Dave? 20 weeks a year she'll be here Monday through Thursday? Is that about right?
Ooh, I'd say 18 and a half.
Well, I'm already gone tomorrow.
Shocker.
Shocking.
Oh, dear.
We're looking forward to it, Susie.
Thank you, my dear. Everyone that talks to me says, does he really beat up on you that bad? You should tell him to be nice to you. And I said, oh, you guys, he's fine. He's a man. What do you expect? They ain't got no brains.
Apparently all men are dumb and must eat food. What can we do next? Thank you, Susie.
All right. Talk to you.
About 15 minutes, our Secret Service guests on this Senate damning report, highly critical on the first assassination attempt of former President Donald Trump. That's coming up here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Jason Russell, in about 10 minutes, former Secret Service agent, who's joined us multiple times since the first assassination attempt on Donald Trump, a bipartisan, scathing Senate report on what happened and what didn't happen when the former president was in Butler, Pennsylvania. See what Jason Russell has to say on that. So another story on a topic that we have discussed before, David. It's a longer story. I think it was in the New York Times. Doesn't really matter. On more restaurants making an attempt to lower prices But in lowering prices, they're giving us smaller portions. It's a lot. When you go out to most restaurants, you're paying a lot, and you're given a lot of food. You see this, if you have a chance to travel outside this country, it's startling how different our portions are. And I think also, Dave, our portions have really changed decade after decade. So can enough restaurants, do you think, Dave Harrigan, give us, because you're like a salad, you know, you can have the dinner salad, you can have the entree salad. Are enough places going to say, okay, here's our steak. Here is, well, I guess you see that a little bit with steak, so maybe that's a poor example, but pastas and fish and chicken, where they're gonna say, here's the one item for, I don't know, $12, $15, whatever. Here's our other one for $20, $25. Or are some restaurants just going to advertise that we think most restaurants are giving you too much? We're aware of you not wanting to spend too much. So, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd like to pay less and get the same amount. But guess what? We also want to stay in business. Do you think that's going to happen more and more? And will consumers seek it out?
I give it about a 0.5% chance.
How come?
Why did Red Lobster go into bankruptcy, Chad? Because people crushed never-ending shrimp.
I would also say Red Lobster always overrated, but
are you besmirching Cheddar Bay biscuits right now? Because watch yourself if you are.
Not the biscuits. I'm not. The biscuits always lived up to it. The fish, eh.
Fish is fun.
But you're right. They're, look, Olive Garden making adjustments right now.
Never-ending pasta bowl. That's, I mean, they've been doing that for years, too. I think going out, I mean, yeah, I guess we all say that, well, we'd like, you know, more sensible portions. We don't want to feel bloated and, you know, all that after we eat too much. But you know what happens when you go out and they bring you that giant plate of pasta or a big pizza or a, you know, a half-pound burger with a huge pile of fries or onion rings next to it.
And the bun that's about as big as your head.
Exactly right. We get excited, don't we? I'm sure there's plenty of research that shows some sort of hormones getting released into our brain, this dopamine of, oh, yeah, this is why I came to this restaurant right here. No, I don't think we will get the same experience, and I think any restaurant that would go with the model of, we'll charge you less, but we're going to give you less, I think people would try it out and realize they're not, they don't feel, at least in their brain, quite as happy as they do when they show up for the never-ending pasta bowl.
Yeah, if the messaging is we're giving you less, and we know how all of us don't listen to entire messages. I mean, I haven't listened to you one time since we started working together. I think that's going to be the problem because, wait a sec, I'm going to this place now or for the first time or I've ate here before and now I'm getting less. What percentage of people do you think bring home leftovers, not because, let's say, they were full already, but did they just think the portions are so large and they don't want to eat that much?
I don't know if that percentage is higher than the percentage of people that go to the restaurant, eat till they're full, see the plate sitting there and say, well, I'll just keep dabbling a little bit. I was going to take this home, but I mean, it's
there's a lot of that.
It's a burger and fries. That's not going to taste good leftover, so I should probably just eat it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been that person before.
Oh, I'm that person almost every time.
Every one of us. Yeah, every one of us. I want to see that experiment happen, but you're right. There are a lot of people who will say, yeah, God, restaurants have to change this. But are they really going to act on it? I'm a little more optimistic than you, but not a lot more, I hate to say. All right, this Senate report, which is bipartisan, what a novel concept. The two parties can work together. And it's, I think I used the word scathing before. It is. It is highly critical of the Secret Service, the communication, who was in charge, how was no one in charge, what was known about the individual who was trying to kill Donald Trump that day. Jason Russell, 8 years a Secret Service agent for George W. Bush and Barack Obama, joined us before. He's excellent. He's next on CCO. Jason Russell back with us. 8 years as a Secret Service agent working closely with Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Now involved in excellent company that we will talk about throughout this conversation. And we appreciate Jason coming on and the perspective he gives us as a former Secret Service agent. As you know, sir, the Senate came out today with a bipartisan report on what happened with the first assassination attempt, and it is highly, highly critical. I want to bring up a number of points, but as someone who lived this and knew how important your job was in protecting the President of the United States, what part of this report jumped out at you most?
I think for me, the piece that was really, that as I'm reading through this, is truly kind of baffling to me, is nobody seemed to know who was in charge of making decisions, which was counter to what I experienced as an agent. Everything was really kind of detailed in terms of what the chain of command was on visits, who was making decisions, who should have looked at a site, how we were integrating police into our security plans. And it seems like in this case, like everybody's just pointing the finger at another person and nobody really gave any good answers to those questions.
That was number one on my list also, and I just don't understand. I don't understand how the former president of the United States can be speaking in public with buildings around him, and people are uncertain on the security side who has the final say. You talked about that in your first answer, but can you envision any scenario with George W. Bush or Barack Obama? And I know, as we've talked in the previous conversations, it is different with a former president, and it seems like because of this attack and sadly another attack that the amount of security continues to go up. But I am stupefied that you would have someone of this status and nobody knows who's making the final decision.
Yeah, there is no excuse for it. I mean, ultimately, I think what you have here is complacency. You know, when you go for so many years as the Secret Service did without any major incidents, or at least preventing things from happening, when nothing happens, you assume nothing's going to happen tomorrow. And I think what you had happen in this situation is you had agents, unfortunately, that started to get a little bit too comfortable and thinking we can cut corners and move quickly through these processes and maybe not communicate as much as we need to. And ultimately, when you do that, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for something bad to happen. And that's just not how you conduct a zero-fail mission. You have to be perfect every single time. And clearly, in this case, they didn't take the time to be perfect.
I want to emphasize the bipartisan part of this, because too often, with anything based in politics, whether it's out of Washington, D.C., or in our case, St. Paul, or anywhere you name it, it's Republicans with one story and Democrats with the other. That's not the case here. Senator Gary Peters, a Democrat, is the chairman of this committee. And here's Richard Blumenthal. By the way, Richard Blumenthal and Donald Trump agree on about one item out of 5,000. Here's what Senator Blumenthal had to say, the senator out of Connecticut. It was almost like an Abbott and Costello farce with who's on first. It was really truth being stranger than fiction. I want to get to more of the details in a second. But, Jason, should I feel like, as a citizen, that this isn't just a one-off, that this may have happened multiple times when the former president was out and about speaking?
It's certainly possible, right? As long as nobody made an attempt and there was nothing bad happened, we wouldn't know, you know, if there were corners cut and if these lack of communication and kind of just lack of attention to detail was pervasive? Was this a one-off situation? I can tell you that my experience was not this. My experience was not, you know, kind of a lack of attention to the small granular level details because we took it so seriously. Now, I do know in election years, these agents are stretched pretty thin and you're trying to do a lot of things. And unfortunately, I think that's what we saw in this case. And truthfully, look, the fact that, you know, this is a bipartisan issue and you have both sides agreeing on something is pretty amazing. But this is a pretty easy one to agree that there were some serious mistakes made.
Jason Russell's with us, founder of Secure Environment Consultants, a group that is worth checking out. You can find them at secprotects.com. He's on because of his years protecting Barack Obama and George W. Bush. I think a lot of us that day, Jason, even without your expertise, were wondering, well, how could this individual get so close? And a part of the report says that no one involved in the rally itself could say who made the call to exclude from the security perimeter the nearby warehouses where Crux was. Isn't that just an automatic no-brainer considering the proximity?
Yeah, the proximity alone. Even if it's outside of the actual perimeter where you're sweeping people, it's not too far for, you know, something bad to occur from that location. So you would want to account for it in one way or another. And it sounds like just as, you know, was said, a comedy of errors occurred where I thought you were taking care of it. You thought I was taking care of it. Meanwhile, neither one of us was taking care of it. And we didn't even catch on to the fact that neither one of us were taking care of it to the point where somebody actually is able to climb on the roof and fire a shot. I mean, that's extreme levels of, quite frankly, incompetence, and it's unacceptable.
Incompetence. Yeah, incompetence. I mean, here's another part that I can see what Blumenthal is saying. One agent was so busy trying to fix his own radio that he failed to pick up the local police radio he had been offered. Had he grabbed the radio, he would have heard the local police traffic describing a suspicious person who turned out to be Crooks. Okay, help me out. I get that sometimes we all in our own lives could have bizarre timing and miss something or something takes place, right? But in this case, this individual misses out because he's trying to fix or isn't willing to take that radio. How is this not just a red flag where it's repeated a number of times? Did anybody hear me? There's an individual we're worried about. What should we do about this person? I don't understand how this is a one-off and that, well, nobody got back to me, so we'll just keep going with the rest of our day.
Well, that could happen, right? If you were at previous sites and nothing happened, you assume nothing's going to happen. The communication piece to me is one of the most baffling because every site you go to, everybody is in the same room for that very reason, which is if my radio fails, at least somebody else's radio works. So somehow we can have communication with each other. But, I mean, they had two different command posts, which is unheard of. That's never done in any emergency response or any event planning that has ever occurred anywhere. So that alone created this lack of communication, which just snowballed upon a poor advance. You know, supervisors not doing walkthroughs. The special agent in charge of the office didn't even have his radio with him because he had to give his radio to somebody else. So he's not even in communication with anybody, and he's actually in charge of that field office. So it's just crazy.
Why should we believe it's better now?
You know, I don't know. I honestly couldn't. I'm not there, right? So I think that I know the agents certainly are embarrassed by this. The agents that work hard every single day to make sure that they are paying, you know, extreme attention to detail, and they're away from their families for months at a time, and they're working 80 hours a week to try to make sure that these things work. And, you know, this thing happens, and all of a sudden everybody's called into question. I think that we have to rely on the fact that the Secret Service is going to learn from these mistakes and make changes, and we have to hope that these changes will limit the opportunity for something like this to occur in the future.
Former Secret Service agent, excellent guest, Jason Russell's with us. One last point. When we're talking about money, and some money was just included again in what's going to continue running the government for 3 months. As just an outsider, Jason, this doesn't strike me as money. This strikes me as just incompetence and facing challenges that smart people face all the time when they go to unique settings, and they handled it like individuals who haven't faced these challenges ever before. I mean, I get it. They need more people. They're overworked. But of the people who were there, it's just startling and frightening how they handled this to me.
No, it is not a money issue. I mean, the problem is a resource issue and, quite frankly, creativity. I mean, there are ways to secure, whether it's using private assets or, you know, there's other ways to do these things where you can't necessarily bring in a Secret Service agent to be able to secure areas that don't need, you know, somebody with the training of a Secret Service agent. You could have put any security guard on the roof of that building to prevent somebody from being able to get up there. He didn't have to be a Secret Service agent with a year of training and a polygraph test. He could have been somebody with a simple background check and eyes, right? So that is just something that they don't do.
Very good, sir. Let's hope that nothing. Well, one last thing. The Iranian aspect comes up again, right? Where the Trump campaign was told again, I don't know how often they've met, but that the Iranian government, in trying to continue to sow trouble in this country, has targeted Donald Trump. Because of that coming up again, what should change now?
Well, just, I mean, the number of assets are just going to have to be to an extreme level. We're already seeing levels of protection right now that are more typical for, like, an inauguration where they're using bullet-resistant glass on the stage, and they're just going to have to, you know, rely on other assets. I'm sure they're relying heavily on military assets now and doing everything they can to just go overboard to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. We'll reach out again.
Thanks.
Jason Russell with us. It's 2:50 on Newstalk 830 WCCO. We've been playing Tom Petty all day, your bumper theme. I've said it before. I'll say it here. I think of the big stars of the last 30 years or so, and my regret of not seeing them or an individual concert, I think Tom Petty's one for me. And he was here all the time. What the heck is, well, this will take a while. What's wrong with me? How could I not see Tom Petty?
I think about this a lot. Like, what are the, who are the artists that we're going to regret? Like, you know, my regret is I had opportunities to go out to Paisley Park. Mm-hmm. And it always was like, I'm going to go out there at 11 at night. Maybe Prince will be there. Maybe not. And you just think like, there'll be a better opportunity. And then he's gone. You're like, oh, that was stupid.
That was a bad one.
Bad call? Yes.
Were you treated like Prince yesterday at Target Field?
No.
Well, did you go for a bike ride with Molly today? You were very fascinated with Paul Molitor and bike rides.
I should have texted him. Let's go. Let's go.
He would go with you.
Probably. I think he would kick my butt, though. He is in considerably better shape than I am.
Hot take. Jason DeRusha thinks Paul Molitor's a better athlete than himself. I mean, I'm shocked. Jason's going to lead you up to the Twins right here on the home of the Twins, CCO.